the, we can't reduce, we can't have campaign financing limits, but we can't, we, obviously, I guess we must be able to, if we've got a $1,000 limit, we must be able to put a $500 limit in. And I think that it would force people to go and seek, if they're going to spend money, to seek it from more people. And I think that's healthy, and that's why I offered the amendment.
So any debate? Representative Boyer?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, you know, I don't think by putting the $1,000 or the $500 amendment in place would be would have the effect of reducing the size of campaigns. So, I mean, that shouldn't enter into the argument at all, because, you just talked about spreading it out to more people to raise the same amount of money. The point is that you're going to raise whatever it takes to win the election, regardless of whether or not you've got $1,000 or $100 campaigns, or you don't reduce the size of campaigns by having an amount. I mean, the speaker referenced the fact that you just spread things out, and I would agree that that's what you would do. You would collect the money, period. But I would argue that, again, this kind of an amendment favors incumbents, and it also favors people who are better well-to-do or more well-to-do. The wealthier people are going to know more wealthier people than the person who might be challenging the wealthier person. I mean, if you're a kid from the south side of town, wherever the south side is, and it always seems to be the poorer side of town. that's right, except in Anchorage. But you're going to have a more difficult time finding $500 checks or $1,000 checks, and probably you're going to appeal to a narrower group of people who don't have the... I mean, your base is going to be narrower, and so if you knock out the people, the amount of money that you're going to be able to raise from a narrow group of people by half, I mean, you're going to have... I mean, it's going to be more difficult to raise the money, be credible as a candidate. And, how this works, I can be more plain. It's hard for me to speak in circles when I should be speaking more directly. Yeah. Because I'm not making my point. I'll be very blunt. I mean, if it makes the point more clearly that, Republicans have a better way, an easier way of raising, $500 checks, and Democrats have a difficult time raising, the money, and there are fewer pockets. I mean, this is based on my own experience, that you ought to grab the $1,000 where you can grab the $1,000, and if you knock that down to 500, you're still only dealing with the same amount of sources for the big hit. And you've just limited. I mean, I'd be cutting off my nose here to vote for an amendment like this, where I'd be knocking off the potential sources of $1,000 checks. And I don't see where this... I mean, benefits Democrats particularly, and that's just putting it as bluntly as I can.
Mr. Representative Frank, you want to respond?
Boy, that's a hard one to respond to, because it seems to me that if you're a person of the people, that the smaller, and I'd prefer to go down lower than this. I chose 500 because it was in the original bill, and it seemed to be an achievable amount. I think we should lower it down. But if you claim to be person of the people, and if you want to get partisan about it, the Democrats are, supposed to always talk, having the support of the people out there, and it's the rich Republicans that are, giving the $1,000, and it seems to me, this seems like an anti-Republican and pro-Democrat piece of amendment here. And so I'm surprised to see the opposition from a prominent Democrat. I don't know. I don't buy the argument that you're going to narrow your base of support by reducing the size of the maximum contribution. I mean, it seems to me quite the contrary.
That's Representative Brown, for sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Representative Frank was out of town on Monday, and therefore we didn't consider this amendment in the subcommittee. I think I'm going to support the amendment. I think that I agree more with the arguments that it will further limit the influence of large contributors. The bill does do one thing that the members should be aware. It essentially cuts in half what someone can give now in a two-year period. You can only, under this bill, give $1,000 in 2 years instead of $2,000, as the present law allows. I think there are a number of ways to go at this issue and this problem, and I think that lowering the limit to 500, as the original bill did propose, would fit with the other things that are proposed here and would go another step toward trying to bring down the money being spent in campaigns. So I'm going to support it.
Gibson, for sure.
I was going to say much of the same thing. I wanted to bring out one statistical point, though, that in a House race where you have a $20,000 total limit, except for individuals, but on labor unions, corporations, and groups, you know, obviously you divide that by 1,000, you got 20 people, can just, that's your campaign, it's over. You got, if you can get 20 people with $1,000 checks, it's over. And that kind of scares me. Obviously that's just too small a group to have as count as backers to one's campaign to represent 25,000 people in a double House district. So I would be in support of this. Relative to the framework that we've set in the bill here, I think if the framework were different in the bill, it would present a different set of facts. But within these total caps, I think that makes some sense.
Representative Davis?
I'm going to support this amendment too. I think that, you know, when you put a campaign together, you definitely do count up the number of people that are possibly can give $1,000. And so I think the overall impact, I think, of this legislation could be one that you would reduce the amount of money that would be spent on a campaign. And two, I think it would provide non-incumbents a greater opportunity to participate by lowering the overall amount of a campaign.
Any further comments on it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman, I don't think, again, that you reduce the size, because if your campaign takes $75,000 or $100,000, whatever the amount of money is to win, you're going to go out and raise that amount of money. I mean, you're going to try your hardest, and you're probably going to hawk yourself, as I said before, or last week. You're going to spend as much as you've got in your back pocket and then probably borrow what you don't, regardless of what that number is. And I can't believe that, that you'd expect that 20 people in a district, and I don't know where you could run in the state of Alaska a successful campaign at $20,000, except for some of the rural areas where you might have some advantages, but you're not suggesting here that 20 people could buy a campaign, and it just to limit seems defeating. But I don't want to be blunt again, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any further debate on the amendment number two? Roll call vote, please.
Senator Meadows?
No.
Senator Boyer?
No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative
Gall? Yes. No. You need 6 votes for an amendment to pass. The amendment fails. What's the pleasure of the group?
Mr. Chairman. Representative, in relation to moving bill from committee.
Any further amendments? People to testify, whatever the... What's the pleasure of the group?
There are no further amendments, Mr. Chairman. If no one wishes to testify, I would move that we pass House Bill 137, CS Finance, from committee.
Is there objections? Mm-hmm. Hearing none, so ordered. This bill is moved out of committee with individual recommendations. Committee substitute for House Bill 299. An act revising the state game laws. This bill makes many changes to state game laws. Representative Donnelly was here earlier. One of the things that's on this particular bill, it came up from Judiciary, I'd like to read the report from it, and I'm going to send it into a subcommittee. Max Grunberg, look at technical amendments. And Fran Almer, needs amendments. Robin L. Taylor, do not pass. Mike Navarre, no recommendation, needs work. Sam Cotton, no recommendations, need work. John Sun, no recommendations. I'm going to appoint a subcommittee consisting of Reps and Boyer Chair, Squack, Hammer, Wallace, and Rieger, that if this subcommittee feels that you need to send this particular bill back to House Judiciary, please see me on this. If not, this bill is in subcommittee. But we might be sending this bill back down. Is there anybody that would like to testify on this bill before it goes in subcommittee? Sir? Would you state your name, please?
My name is Roger McCoy, and I represent the Department of Public Safety. I direct your attention to Section 5-15-060, Paragraph 5, which is Line 10, Page 3. And just as a matter of a point of clarification only, it is assumed that the Department of Public Safety's role will be to investigate the investigation of permittees, licensees, and their employees. With reference to our fiscal note attached, which provides for a clerk for to ascertain if a criminal record exists by accepting and processing the applicant's fingerprints through an appropriate agency, it does not, and this is the clarification, it does not provide for an extensive background investigation of an applicant that would include interviews of references, employers, etc. Now, we estimate approximately 1,200 applicants will require investigation, which is a low conservative figure. If an in-depth investigation on applicants is required by the department, then our physical note would drastically increase. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thank you, sir. We will be having these hearings in subcommittee if the subcommittee so desires. If not, we'll be sending this bill down to House Judiciary. Thank you. Is there anybody else like to testify on this bill? If not, this bill is in subcommittee. Oh, did you? Yes.
Representative Adams.
Yes. Please
state your name. Member of the Finance Committee, for the record, my name is Ginger Bame. I'm an aide to the House Labor and Commerce Committee, the prime sponsor of House Bill 299. I just wanted to respond to the gentleman from Public Safety to point out to the committee that the line in question has been is no change from current law and has been on the books since 1960.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else? This bill is in subcommittee. The chair would like to hear your recommendation, Ripson, Boyer, and Swack, Hammer, and Wallace, and Rieger, as to if you would like to work on this by Monday, please.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we'd like to move on or work on the bill. Speaking as the chairman of the subcommittee, I think that the work that has been done is worthwhile and something that we'd like to concentrate on.
Thank you, sir. The next bill we'll take up is House Bill number 197, an act relating to the delivery of supplies purchased under the State Procurement Code and providing for an effective date. The sponsor is Representative Donnelly. There is no fiscal note. And as I understand that the provisions of this bill are already being exercised by the department, but this action is to ensure that future department continue with this policy to deliver state supplies in-state. Is there anybody here to speak on this bill?
Again, for the record, my name is Ginger Mame. I'm an aide to the House Labor and Commerce Committee, which is a prime sponsor of House Bill 197. The House Labor and Commerce Committee introduced House Bill 197 last year in response to requests from the Alaska Manufacturers Association. And as Representative Adams has pointed out, the Department of Administration has testified that this is already their policy. The Alaska Manufacturers Association asked us if that was the case, then there should be no objection to putting it into statute, that in any case, in any state bid documents for purchase of supplies under the State Procurement Code, that the designated point for delivery shall be within Alaska unless the department determines that it's best interest of the state to have a delivery point outside of the state of Alaska.
Representative Gull, would you like to send it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you prefer me to address my questions to Mr. Doan?
Pardon me?
Just waiting for Dave to come forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Donnelly, I read the bill. I'm trying to felt my question yesterday to a witness was a little aggressive, so I'm trying to find a way to ask this in a way that doesn't appear to be so, but for the life of me, I can't understand why we need the bill. I mean, why can't it just be you put out a bid to someone, you say you want it delivered somewhere or whatever, it's already being done. Just don't understand the reason for the bill. I appreciate that some special interest group asked for it, but I'm just sort of baffled. Could you explain why this should be in statute and not in regulation or just in the bid document?
Mr. Chair? Representative, for the life of me, I can't understand why we need this bill either. You would think administrations would do this, but we habitually get phone calls from constituents saying, well, I just bid on something that was FOB Seattle, and yet they deny it. In fact, in state affairs, when we did the confirmation hearings for Mr. Pesca, one of his main goals in life was to get those people, when he was put in as the commissioner of administration, was to get those contracting officers down at the ground level to do this. And I wish Mr. Pesca was here today, because I've followed up with him. I talk to him about once, you know, every other month we get together. I say, how's it going? He says, you can't believe how hard it is to get these people to do that. I mean, he was relaying his frustrations and working with the lower level of the bureaucracy, trying to get them to do things that just made good common sense for Alaskans. And so I totally agree with you, Representative Gall, and it's just a shame that we're going to, you know, that some of us feel we have to put it in statute. I mean, you're absolutely right. It should be in regulation. It should be just done automatically. And I'm sure the administration's here to say they do it. They don't want to be told that they have to do it. But that, how many times have we heard that argument, too? Oh, you don't have to tell us to do it. We'll just do it. And then next year we hear the complaints again. So that's where we're at.
Thank you, Representative Donnelly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my only comment would be maybe we should amend the bill to indicate that administration employees should do what their commissioners tell them to do.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Rieger?
Yeah.
Any further questions? Let's place a group. Representative Rieger?
Chairman, I move the Finance Committee report out House Bill 197, individual recommendation.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. It's moved out of committee. We do have one more bill today. Senate Bill number 356, and that relating to the procurement for state agriculture and fishing products and providing for an effective date. This is sponsored by Senator Josephson. It has a zero fiscal note. This bill would require school districts which receive state monies to give preference to Alaska agricultural and fishing products. And is there anybody that would like to testify for this on this bill? Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is David Finkelstein. I work for Senator Josephson. I'll be real brief. This bill came about as a follow-up to last year's bill, which established the product procurement preference for agricultural and fisheries products. The problem we discovered was in the area dealing with the school districts. Some of the school districts feel that they didn't have to follow the law because although they were getting state money, they weren't using state money for the exact project or the exact procurement that was in question. And the issue came up most clearly in the case of milk purchases, where the Anchorage School District felt it wasn't able to apply the preference because they felt that they weren't using any state money for that particular procurement. We made the point to them that they're getting a ton of state money through all sorts of things, and it comes to the school district in various forms, and it could only be a sleight of hand that they could use to claim that none of that money filtered into this program. But their feeling was that it was clear there's a separation, that there are certain programs that don't use it. So, but they are willing and are very interested in trying to use the preference, and they indicated to us that they would like to see a change in law, which is represented by this bill. Their feeling was that if it was clearly set out that it was any entity that receives state money rather than uses state money, that they would follow law. In fact, they would defend the law in that case because they'd like to be able to give the preference to Alaskan producers. We learned yesterday that the Attorney General's office has a problem with it, and a speaker, Iris Barnett, will follow me. The issue, I'm not a lawyer, so I won't attempt to, I'll let her describe the problem. We just learned about this. We'd be glad to provide a memo if it was necessary, outlining our views on the constitutionality of this approach. We haven't asked the bill drafters to provide a particular memo. I guess we assumed that they were in agreement since they had followed the original bill and had been involved in the development of this bill. The issue just comes down to the Commerce Clause and any restrictions on that would be allowed within that. I'm not sure there's any particular middle ground. We still believe the bill is a valid approach. We've been told by the school district that they would be prepared to defend this, and we think it's a good approach. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing that occurred to me looking at the way the change is in Section 1 and 2 and so on is, what about state money which goes to a nonprofit, and then the nonprofit purchases a product? It looks like, in a way, you've removed them from the local preference, whereas before they were covered. Is that a fair characterization?
It's an interesting point that I've never looked at. We talked another point in the bill, in the existing statute, as to what state money is. It includes reimbursement to municipalities, etc. Maybe, though, the argument could be made that there are other things that could be included besides these monies, and that it could include grants for various purposes, and that they might be affected. If that's the case, then I think you're right, and I think that's a good point.
Well, I don't want to hold up the bill. I'm not aware of a problem or a complaint about a nonprofit bypassing the intent of an in-state bidder preference, but I could see this bill coming back to clean up a loophole that we're creating. Maybe next year or the year after.
Well, and we'd certainly be open to making a change to add grantees, or however we refer to them, something broad enough to add in those categories that aren't municipalities and school districts.
Mr. Chairman, if the sponsors of this legislation want to get a message to any of us over on this side, maybe you might be interested in doing a floor amendment or something.
Thank you, sir. The chair at this time calls Iris Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Iris Barnett, and I'm here on behalf of the Department of Law. As Mr. Finkelstein said, we see some problems with this bill, and the major one is the Commerce Clause problem. The federal Constitution has a Commerce Clause which prohibits states from passing legislation that favor in-state residents and discriminate against out-of-state residents. And there is an exception to that when a state is acting as a market participant, when the state is out there buying or selling some goods. That is why the present statute that restricts states when using state money is acceptable and does not cross the problem of the Commerce Clause. But the amendment would say whenever a municipality or school district that receives state money in any capacity spends any money, whether it be state money or federal money, that it has to apply this local preference, and that's where the problem comes in. It's my understanding that there are federal funds involved with the milk program, and this legislation is trying to restrict the use of the federal funds, and that's where there's a problem, because it's not that the state is acting as a market participant. The state is not out there buying or selling. The state is instead administering federal funds. The United States Supreme Court has addressed this several times, and though we don't know just what the Supreme Court would say, the line of cases indicates that with respect to federal funds, we'd have a problem, and that the court might well find that the Commerce Clause is violated, and that's what our concern is here. We also noted a couple of other things that I thought it important to bring to your attention. If this bill is passed, and if you intend to have it applied to home rule municipalities, it would be necessary to amend AS 2910-200, which sets out the limitations on home rule municipalities. Of course, you know, without those limitations, home rule municipalities can do whatever they choose, and so if the intention is to limit them as well, it would be necessary to amend AS 2910-200. Also, with respect to the definitions in this bill, the first one is for agricultural products, and the definition itself includes manufactured in the state. I think that the intention is to define agricultural products and then perhaps to also define harvested in the state, so that it makes it clear that you're talking about agricultural products is one thing and what harvested in the state means is another thing, rather than having agricultural products mean harvested in the state. And finally, the definition for school district, I don't believe that's necessary, as AS 12010 subsection 3 already seems to define REAA districts as school districts. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yes, Ripson, for sure.
This is maybe more a comment than a question. Ms. Barnett, as you know, we pass bills like this all the time, and half of them get into trouble. We seem intent on wanting to pass them anyway. Really, what difference does it make? I mean, the only ultimate test on all of these preference bills is whether or not we get sued, and then whether or not the court finds against us, right?
Well,
I mean,
yes. I ultimately, yes. I mean, if the legislature wants to pass a bill that ready for a fight.
Let me ask a more practical question then. Do you think that on the basis of the bill as written that we would stand a very likely chance of being sued?
Yes, and my understanding is that there may actually be a retailer, an Alaskan retailer in the wings, who buys his milk from Oregon and wishes to sell it to the Anchorage School District. He may well sue the state because with this bill, he would not be able to continue to sell his milk to the school district. The school district would have to purchase milk produced in the state.
So then, if sued, what in your professional opinion is would be our chances of successfully defending our law?
Given the case law in the United States Supreme Court, I'd say we'd have less than 50-50 chance of prevailing. There's a case that's pretty close in which the court clearly distinguished when the city was expending its own funds and when the city was using federal funds. And when the city was using its own funds on construction projects, the court said, that's fine, you're acting as a market participant, you can restrict the employees, you can require that the job be done by 50% of city employees. But when you're talking about federal funds, the court relied on something else. The court said, the court did not specifically say you're not a market participant, but the court said, well, there are federal regulations that affirmatively sanction what you want to do. I think the court could well say, well, in that case, if the city were a market participant with respect to its own funds and federal funds, we wouldn't need to have justified the use of federal funds by the regulations. We would have said, well, you're a market participant when you spend your funds or federal funds. The fact that they made that distinction, I think, is problematic. And in another case, in an Alaska case, when the state passed regulations regarding processing in the state of logs, the Wanneke case, the state slapped Alaska's hand again, saying that when you're not a market participant, you cannot require, cannot implement a local preference.
What about in the cases we've been focusing on milk here, and as that involves, I understand, federal monies, that that therein lies what the what hinges on the argument you're making. What about for other examples of where we're not, where the bill would apply in non-federal money situations,
like
such as the school district purchasing new cabinets with foundation monies, or a jobs, state grant monies, jobs bill monies for refurbishing a kitchen at an elementary school, and they don't give a 7% preference for local wood products.
Well, with respect to all the money that is being spent, if it's foundation fund money or construction money, it's clearly state money, and under the present statute, in making those purchases, the school district would be using federal funds. And so that applies. This, the current legislation already encompasses that. There's no need to make any amendment for those kind of purchases. It's using state money, and therefore it's in the market and wants to get the best deal it can, or give a local preference if it wants. That's fine under the current legislation.
So we're going beyond that where exactly?
In changing the language from using state money to receive state money. By having using state money, it's whenever the school district is making a purchase with state money, it can apply the local preference. That's fine. No Commerce Clause problem, because it's a market participant. But what the bill is doing, it's saying, school district, by virtue of the fact that you receive state money for some other purpose,
right,
in any purchase that you make,
right,
that's where the Commerce Clause problem comes in.
And did you offer this testimony in Labor and Commerce Committee?
No. It's my understanding that this is the first time the Department of Law was asked to review this bill. So we have not had an opportunity beforehand to testify or to review it. Had we reviewed it earlier, we would have raised this problem.
All through the Senate, nothing?
That's my understanding.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Gull.
Thank you, sir. Could you characterize just very briefly the intent of the bill as you read it, and whether there is a way to realize to some extent that intent and still stay on track with federal constitution?
I think the intent of the bill is to do just what the Commerce Clause doesn't let the state do, and that is to require that there be a preference, a local preference, anytime funds are expended. I mean, the intention of the Commerce Clause is to deny states the opportunity to just favor their own residents. And the Congress can do that. Congress can decide, federal legislation can decide that Alaska could favor its own residents over Oregon residents. And the idea is that in Congress, all states are represented. So if there's a preference is enacted by the federal legislature, everybody has had a chance, all the states have had a chance to be participating in that. Here in Alaska, if the legislature passes legislation, it's a very parochial interest hurting other residents of other states. And so that's why a state cannot put those kind of restrictions on interstate commerce. So I don't see a way to change this bill to allow the state, when spending federal money and not acting as a market participant, to be able to require local purchases.
How about if it
said something like the school districts will endeavor to accomplish the language of the bill rather than require. I guess what disturbs me, and I don't know that there is an answer, and I'm sort of sorry to see the whole problem, but the existing statute obviously is intended to provide a benefit to Alaska agricultural products, and by strengthening it in this way or to this degree, Department of Law seems to be indicating its feeling that we've gone over the line of what you could defend in court. I'm afraid that if one were to weaken the preference for, you know, to utilize this language, but weaken the preference to something in the lines of a recommendation, that it would do damage to the entire statute, which apparently you feel can be sustained in court as it exists today. Without belaboring it, do you see any middle ground there? Is there any way that this language could be modified to help the sponsors encourage school districts more effectively to meet the bidder preference regarding agricultural products, and at the same time not lock it up so tightly as to push us over that line?
Well, with respect to the milk, which seems to be the problem that raised these amendments, I believe it was the administrator or somebody in the school district, Mr. Freeman, wrote the Department of Agriculture regarding this. And apparently the Department of Agriculture said that with respect to local preferences, they did not see a violation of federal regulations. So it seems to me that if the school district wishes to use the federal funds and purchase locally, it could do that.
So in other words, one could leave the language in statute and specifically permit a school district to act in this fashion if it so chose, and that might be defensible?
I think the school district probably could do it now if it wished to, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions before this bill goes into subcommittee? Thank you, Ms. Barnett. I'd like you to work with the subcommittee on some of these concerns that has been addressed this afternoon. The subcommittee will consist of Representative Gull as chair, Representative Pashaw, and Representative Frank. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on the bill before it goes in? This bill is in subcommittee. That completes our agenda today. House Finance.
Anything to do with the state of Amy?